Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is one of the other Kevins in the SMA community. I have with me today Kevin Chandler, who is an author, speaker, and founder of the nonprofit organization We Carry Kevin, which he will talk all about today. Yeah, he's originally from North Carolina and now lives with his wife, Katie, in Indiana. So we'll be talking about Kevin's career and everything in between and relationships. So, Kevin, it's so great to see you and so great to have you on today.
You too, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And also, like, two quick antidotes for listeners. So one, if I sound really nasally, tis the season for allergies. So don't worry, I'm not overly sick or anything, but I may have to pause and sound a little unlike myself. So just putting that out there. And then the other one, this is one of my favorite stories to tell, but I told this at the SMA conference last year, but I was at Barnes & Noble, like, one time. This was on New Year's Eve in 2019, and a lady looked at me like she was starstruck, and she came up to me and asked if I was the world traveler who made all the adaptive backpacks, and I had to look at her and say, like, oh, actually, I'm the other Kevin in the SMA community. And I mean, for our listeners who are don't know what Kevin Chandler is looking, what I look like, I have short, dark brown hair, darkish, like, black brown hair, and glasses. Kevin is redhead, no glasses. So it just, I posted about it on social media, and I was like, you know, all wheelchair users look the same. So that's one of still one of my favorite stories. But but anyway, I will shut up. Kevin, so great to see you today.
Yeah, you too, man.
Absolutely. Well, to get started, so, you know, first off, for those who don't know you, can you talk a little bit about what you do and what We Carry Kevin is? We'll get more into the founding of it and everything about it later on, but if you want to just give a brief intro.
Sure. Someone's trying to call me, so let me cancel that.
No worries.
That's Arvin. Let's see here. Oh, how do I do this? Ah, sorry.
Technical difficulties are always fun. I mean, trust me, I deal with them, and I'm a I cause them all the time. So
there we go. Okay.
Perfect.
Nice. We're back. So what I do, and what We Carry Kevin is, I'll give a little bit of background on that. But I must also compliment you on your Star Wars cup. That was pretty epic. So
I've got a cup here that has a bunch of different lightsabers on it, and then my name, like, in the Star Wars logo right at the bottom.
So great. So great. Speaking of Star Wars, in 2016, my friends and I wanted to go to Europe and do a lot of things that my wheelchair was not going to be able to do. We wanted to dance through the streets of Paris. We wanted to hop over fences in the English countryside. And we also wanted to climb to the top of Skellig Michael, which it was not because of Star Wars, but that's how most people know what Skellig Michael is. It's where Rey was trained in episodes 8 and 9, I guess.
Mainly 8, but yeah, she does come back in 9, I guess. But But it's where she tries to hand over the lightsaber to Luke at the end of Force Awakens, and then starts out Last Jedi there.
Exactly. Yeah, and so we wanted to go there because it has a lot of significance in history and in Christian heritage, and so it was kind of a type of pilgrimage for us that we wanted to take. And and we knew, I mean, it's 600 steps made of very loose rock, going up about, I don't know, 700-800 feet, just spiking out of the ocean. So a wheelchair was not going to go there. And we didn't want to find a way to take a wheelchair there, but we wanted to go. And so we decided that this trip May not be wheelchair friendly, but that didn't mean that it wasn't cabin friendly. And so we came up with a backpack for my friends to carry me in for 3 weeks as we had these adventures. And from there, we heard from families all over the world asking two big questions. One was, where did you get this backpack? And the other was, where did you get these friends? And so we started a nonprofit to answer those two questions. And so that's what I am doing now, full time running that nonprofit, traveling and speaking, sharing our story, writing books, sharing the story of that adventure, as well as other adventures that we've had, and kind of the principle and the ideas behind what we're doing, writing books about that. And then also as we connect with families over these questions, to answer that second question, where'd you get these friends? It would be easy in some ways to write a, how to, here's 5 steps to make friends. But what we found was the best way to answer that question is to say, I don't know the formula, but I'll be your friend. We'll come alongside you and let's start there with our friendship and grow from there. So we're doing a lot of quality time with the families that reach out to us. And sometimes that's in person and sometimes it's online like this. But yeah, that's the adventure that we're on right now.
I love it. And when I met you, what was it, in 2017, I think, you were just getting started with the whole organization, and you were premiering a film and your book at a church in North Carolina, where you're from. So, and I want to talk to you about that, like, going just backtracking a little to your family life. So Kevin, you and your sister Connie also has SMA. Can you talk about growing up, your family dynamics, and what it was like for you and Connie, growing up with SMA, and how you approach that?
Yeah, so we grew up in a very creative, vibrant home. My dad was a airplane mechanic, and my mom was really kind of on the front lines involved with the pro-life movement, and so just a lot of action, a lot of creativity in our home. My older brother is a cartoonist. And so, yeah, just my sister grew up to be, she has two masters, one of which is in teaching English as a second language. And then I just kind of find as many ways as I can to get in trouble. So yeah, our family, Connie and I grew up, asking the question of what can we do and what do we want to do, and pushing the envelope on that, and dreaming big and figuring out how to make that happen. And so yeah, a lot of imagination, a lot of play, and a lot of fostering courage and creativity in our home. But I think too, I'm just going to keep talking because
Go ahead.
you
Yeah.
just to help you out with your sinuses. So, but having a sibling who also has SMA, we're both in wheelchairs. I think that really helped me growing up, because Connie is about 3 years older than me, and so I got to see her try things, and then I could see, it kind of gave me permission to also try things and be brave. And then likewise, as we got older, she saw how I did things and could kind of piggyback off of that. So we just really inspired each other and encouraged each other along as we went. And just having someone that could really to the bone relate to what you're going through has been a really powerful tool for both of us to have. Is to, yeah, to have someone that completely gets you in this regard. I would also say, and we were talking a little bit about this before the call, but or before we hit record, but I think also having a sibling with SMA also, it takes the focus off of yourself. And what I mean by that is there have been times when Connie has been in a weaker state than me, and so I need to care for her, and vice versa. There have been times when I've been in a weaker state than her. And we figured out early on that SMA kind of manifests itself in different ways in everybody. It's kind of different all the way across the board. I have weaker limbs. My arms are a lot weaker, but Connie's lungs are weaker, and so she's more prone to, pneumonia or asthma and things like that. Whereas I, can't always feed myself. Like that, those are our big weaknesses. And I love that they're different weaknesses because then, when she's sick, I can read to her, by her bed. Or, if my arms, if I just can't do it anymore for the day, she can pick up the pen and finish writing what I was doing. And so not only can we relate to each other, but we're also stronger than each other in certain ways. And so, I'm not always asking for help. I get to also help her. And so those dynamics have been really cool throughout our lives. I don't think we always realized it or acknowledged it, but as we get older, we realize how much those kinds of dynamics have shaped who we are. That me, a person in a wheelchair whose arms don't work very well and who can't really hold himself upright, I have someone in my family that I get to legitimately take care of. That's a really, really powerful thing for us. So,
No,
yeah.
I love that. And I think, when I'm describing SMA to other people outside the community, I talk about that spectrum there that it really varies. Like, I mean, the needs I have aren't going to be the same as someone else's. Like, because like you, I have very limited arm strength, but for instance, I've never really had a trouble with chewing and swallowing, or for instance, and my voice is pretty strong. Not great today, but again, sciences, but that, and I love that. Yeah, it's not even something you really are cognizant about growing up, but it just happens naturally because that's like any family dynamic. So that's really cool. And then you talked about how you had this creative environment fostered throughout your childhood. And what were some of your earliest interests, like be it creative or anything else?
So my brother and sister and I all loved making comic books and playing, imagining that we were the X-Men, different stuff like that, out in the backyard, and the kind of those fantastic movies, Back to the Future and Indiana Jones, like all the fun adventure stuff. My brother and I would record on VHS the Batman Superman adventures or Animaniacs. Like we just anything kind of goofy and adventurous, we latched onto. And so yeah, from an early on in life, I loved storytelling, whether I was hearing it or seeing it or telling it myself. That it was really ingrained in me as a wonderful thing. And so I think that's an interest that has stuck with me ever since. And I mean, before I could read, my sister was reading books to me, that Winnie the Pooh or Chronicles of Narnia, different stuff like that. So yeah, storytelling was always a big deal. I have to laugh nowadays because I was really into soccer when I was like 8, 9, 10 years old, maybe a little bit younger than that as well. But my dad built a plate on the front of my footrest for me to hit the ball, and I played soccer on the field with the other kids, and I stopped when they were getting too big, that if they ran into me, it might be detriment to everyone involved. But and even then, I started helping out with coaching and stuff like that, so I could still be involved. I don't do that anymore, but so I'm doing this when I was, 6, 7, 8 years old, and now, there's these whole tournaments of power soccer, and they actually have a wheelchair built specifically for it. And I'm like, oh man, where was that when I was
I was
a
about to
kid?
say
But
you invented it before it was a thing. That's pretty great.
I invented it, but no one knew I
Darn
invented
it.
it. Nobody saw it. No. But yeah, it's super cool to see that sport taking off and going somewhere, and to see the community around it. Yeah, but I have to laugh because I'm like, oh, I was doing that a long time ago. So.
That's great. I love it. And I can see how all of those seeds for what you are doing now were planted in terms of your storytelling and just the environment around you. And with that, so looking at around when you were like high school, college age, what were your plans then? Because I mean, like you said with We Carry Kevin, it just started as this, you wanted to go on a trip and it turned into this huge thing. But before that, what was your mindset and what were you planning on doing?
Yeah, that's kind of a roller coaster in some ways, but because in college I got a degree in counseling in order to go into prison ministry, and ran into some brick walls after college, realizing that I was too much of a hostage risk to get the dream job that I had in mind, of working in a prison full time. To that capacity. In high school and college, and after college a bit, I played in a band. It was a acoustic punk band called Fluffy Roadkill, and we got to do a little bit of touring and recorded a few albums. It's my two best friends that I grew up with, and we just love making music together. When we graduated high school that summer, after our senior year, we wanted to hit the road. We're a band. It's time to spread our wings and fly, and so we made plans to just do like a weekend tour, just kind of get our feet wet. But up until then, I had never had anyone besides my parents or my parents' friends do my caregiving, or whoever was hired at the school to help me. But it was always adults, and they were in authority over me, kind of thing. And we're in a punk band. We're not going to take my mom on the road. I love her, but that's not the place for your mom to be. And so these two guys that I grew up with, Danny and Zach, I actually was realizing recently, I don't even remember us having a conversation about it. It was just kind of, hey, we want to go on tour. We're going to take care of you. Like, that's what we're going to do, because that's what we have to do to pull off what we want to accomplish. And so we hit the road, just the three of us, and they did all of my caregiving while we were on the road. They helped me with the restroom. They got me, changed. like dressed in the morning, and they woke up to turn me in the middle of the night. Like they did everything. And kind of like we were saying earlier, you don't realize it at the time, but then you look back with kind of that aha moment. But that was really where We Carry Kevin started, because that's when the seed was planted that, oh, I don't necessarily need to have hired nurses or my parents, or I don't need someone official to do my caregiving all the time. I could, my friends can do this. We're at an age where that's okay. They're adults and I'm adult, an adult, and so I can just ask them for help and they can help me. And so that kind of translated into college, having roommates that did my care, so I could live on campus, and doing a lot of road trips, a lot of traveling, and eventually moved up here to Fort Wayne. And because of the music experience that I had, I also got into recording and mixing, and so I, when the prison ministry thing didn't work out, I actually became a podcast engineer, and so I would do post-production mixing for podcasts, and that was kind of my full-time job for a few years. And then when the guys and I went to Europe and came home and started answering those questions that families had, that kind of consumed my life. And so I gave up podcasting and started doing the nonprofit full time.
I love it. And it is so fascinating to see, like I said, all those different seeds planted, both in terms of like childhood growing up and the imagination, and then to hear the story about your band and everything. And I've read your book and I know you talk about a lot of this, and it's just so cool to see. And were you having friends as caregivers then for a while, like throughout kind of your mid-20s and stuff, or what was that situation, or did you ever do hire professional?
Right. So I actually have never done any hired professional
Okay.
care. So in college and right after college, I did go through vocational rehab and hired my friends to do caregiving. And then when I was moving to Fort Wayne, which was about 9 years ago, something like that. I just really felt a conviction that the hardest part about that whole process, I'm thankful that those resources are available, but the biggest headache in the whole process was the like getting the paperwork work together and getting the times approved and making sure the checks got out and all that. And it was a headache for the guys as well, not just me. And realizing that most of them didn't care about the money, it allowed them to help me as often as they did. But they were doing it because they were my friends. And so I felt this conviction that maybe that was possible. If I tweaked, if I tweak things a bit.
Hey, hold up, Kevin. You're getting like some echo or something, or like
Oh, weird.
it just started, or like it's like a I don't know. Is something pressing on your mic or anything?
No.
Okay, it's good now. It looked well. Hang on.
We
I don't
good?
know. Yeah, I think you're
Hang
good now.
on. All right.
It's just well, it's weird. Hang on. Let me just make sure it's not on mine. I don't think it's on mine, but sorry. It was just kind of a like. It sounded like kind of like a throb or something on your mic.
Oh, no, it's just sitting there.
Okay, it sounds better, but we'll keep going. But I just wanted to make sure it wasn't
Okay.
anything. Yeah. Okay,
Yeah,
cool.
let me know if it gets bad and I can mute and unmute or something like
No
that.
worries. No worries. All good.
So, is this better?
You got it. You're good, man. But yeah.
What were you saying?
You
Oh,
were talking
so.
about, yeah, friends like not worrying about the pay as much and the paperwork and everything being such a hassle.
Yeah. So I started wondering, well, what is the struggle? Like, what is the hurdle to get over, for just having friends do this? And I realized, it's burnout. It doesn't matter actually how much you pay someone. If they're burned out, then they're not going to be able to do the job, or not even want to do the job. But if I could take care of my friends well, then maybe we could pull this off and we wouldn't need to pay them at all. And so when I moved to Fort Wayne, I decided that that money was not going to be a part of the conversation at all. I was going to simply, the conversation was going to be inviting people in, and just go from there. And what happened was just remarkable. It was overwhelming because I remember calling the guy that I was going to be living with. It was a friend of my sister's, and he needed a roommate. And I was like, "Hey, yeah, I can fill that gap." And I called him, and I was like, "Hey, because we're going to be living together, would you mind like helping with some of my caregiving, like putting me in bed at night and that kind of thing?" And he just kind of laughed. He was like, "Yeah, I kind of assumed that was part of the gig." Like there were some situations where I didn't even need to ask, but so a couple guys kind of jumped in when I got here, and started getting me up in the morning. And there was a coffee shop I hung out at every day, and there were guys that worked there, so they didn't mind helping me with the restroom throughout the day if I needed it. And then I got a few more roommates and a few more caregivers, and my circle of friends just grew. And as it grew, what that meant was, rather than this guy coming every day to get me up, or coming 3 times a week to get me up, he only had to come once a week to get me up. And when you're doing something for an hour once a week, like, it's easy to volunteer that time, and so the more guys that I could get to help, the better. And so nobody was getting burned out, and schedules were working out just fine. And so I've been doing that for the past right about 9 years, and it's been awesome. And now that I'm married, don't have to worry about the evening care. So Katie gets me ready for bed and all that. And so really, I just have guys that come in the morning to get me up, and they hang out for a while. And most of them, if not all of them, really see that time as what one of them called a predictable pattern, which is, if Kevin and I don't get to hang out the rest of the week, at least I know I'm going to see him on this day, and so it's become a gift to them and a gift to me and a gift to our friendship. It gives them routine. It gives them an excuse to hang out with a friend, whatever else is going on in their life. They're not like, "Well, I just need to go hang out with my dude." And instead it's like, "Oh no, my dude needs me," so it's really cool. And yeah, so that's the life that I'm living in that regard. And so when it came to going to Europe and doing the We Carry Kevin trip, it was a matter of inviting those guys into that adventure, and taking what we do here in Fort Wayne on a small town scale, and saying, what if we do it, you know, in the streets of Paris and without a wheelchair? So just upping the stakes, you know, is really all we did.
I mean, yeah, just a little. And again, it's just the way that it evolved from this, you know, trip you always wanted to take into, you know, this now, you know, all consuming part of your life. And and it opened up doors for a career and all these facets. And what's been, I guess, ever since, you know, the first trip, what's been the biggest surprise for you in terms of what We Carry Kevin turned into?
That's a really good question. I mean, I didn't even know if the trip was going to happen. Like, really, I mean, it was so crazy and off the wall that I kind of wondered if it was even going to be possible. And that continues to happen where, you know, we have dreams and we say, well, they seem ridiculous. They seem impossible. How on earth could we, you know, travel to Texas and just spend time with families? And like, who's gonna accept that as a viable thing to do, you know? And there were actually people that said, hey, we want to support that because we think it's important for you to be present and for you to give that gift of quality time to families. And so I think the surprises keep coming out of the impossible continuing to happen over and over.
I love that. And well, and speaking of that, so you mentioned Katie earlier, your wife. So can you talk about that? You know, I know briefly a little bit of the story of how you met, but if you can tell listeners about that and how your relationship's evolved ever since then.
She's awesome. She's not here right now. Otherwise I'd be like, come in here. But so after the Europe trip, about 2 years later, the guys and I went to China, and part of our time in China was spent at an orphanage for children with disabilities. And Katie was working there, kind of helping out with the kids, training the nannies on how to care for these children in a creative way, you know, because they have different disabilities that make them nonverbal or non-mobile or whatever the case may be. And so you have to think outside the box on how you're going to care for them, especially in the attachment sense of helping these kids feel safe and loved and cared for. And so that was her job, was figuring out how to do that and training the caregivers in that. And so she was at the place where we were staying, and we just hit it off. We became friends and stayed in touch. And I found myself probably 8 or 10 months after being there and staying in touch with her, I found myself really like having to remind myself that she was in China, being like, why are you, remember, she's in China. Wait, why are you reminding yourself of that? It doesn't matter. You guys are just friends, but she's in China, you know? And we had a mutual friend that I got lunch with one day, and that friend suggested that I ask Katie out. And it was like a dam just burst in me of like, oh, that's what I want. That's why I've been homesick for the past 10 months, because I met this person that is my other half, and she's literally on the other side of the world. I took some time to pray about it. And because you don't want to take someone away from the work that they're doing when it's that important and profound. But I prayed about it, and then I sent her a text and said, Hey, next time we're in the same country, do you want to get dinner? Can I take you out to dinner? And she wrote back and said, yes, I would very much like to. I'm going to be in Ireland in 2 months, or not Ireland, I'm going to be in Australia in about 2 months for a few days. If you have any speaking gigs there, let me know. Haha. But really, I'll see you next time I'm in the States, kind of thing. And so I called her and I was like, well, I don't have anything in Australia, but I will come and I'll meet you there. I'll take you out on a date because you're worth it. And so yeah, we met up in Sydney, Australia, got to walk the streets for like 3 or 4 days and eat fish and chips on the beach and wander around bookstores and gardens. And my dad went with me, and my friend Luke, and they did all my caregiving. Yeah, we just got to spend time together. And so we did that exactly a year after we met, and then exactly a year later, in September of 2020, right in the middle of all the crazy, we got married here in Fort Wayne and settled down. So that's a very, very short version of our crazy adventure,
Hey,
but
but
it's just beginning.
the big takeaway from that to listeners out there is that if you have any doubts about asking that person out or anything like that, and you're like, oh no, they're not interested, or they're on the other side of the country, big deal. This guy did it, so but I love that story and that it worked out and
Thanks.
everything. It's great, but yeah,
Yeah.
and I mean, obviously, so she was already working in that nonprofit space with like children with disabilities, but nonetheless. What was, I guess, her exposure to SMA, or what questions did she have when you were beginning your relationship?
Yeah, one big one for her was, and she actually asked this, like, I asked her out, like, officially, at the end of our trip to Australia. I said, would you be my girlfriend? And she said yes. And then she was like, but I have a question. And one of her main questions was that, when we were, all she had seen was the guys picking me up and carrying me around and taking me out of my chair or carrying me on their back and no, not using a lift or anything like that. So she was like, how am I going to, like, are we always, if we get married, are we always going to have to travel with caregivers or like, I'm not going to be able to lift you. How does this work? And my dad had actually invented a airplane mechanic. He had invented a lift system that runs off of my wheelchair. And so he had invented it for my sister. And so when she asked, I was like, oh, we got that covered. You'll never have to lift me. We got a lift system, everything's fine. All that to say, yeah, she was worried about kind of that physicality of caregiving, but it's never really been an issue. I don't think she had ever had any direct contact with anyone with SMA particularly, but the kids that she worked with had CP and spina bifida and things like that. And so she was very aware and comfortable with diseases that affect mobility. And something that I really love about Katie, one of the millions of things that just blow my mind about her, is that she really she sees the heart in people and knows how to celebrate that and bring that to the forefront and bring the best out of them. And so I think I'm just really thankful that she saw my heart beyond the wheelchair and beyond the needs and the disability itself. She saw who I was. She tells the story of when we were in China and we got there, and she met us all, and she said, "Wow, who are these awesome guys that carry Kevin around?" And then and very shortly after, she started asking herself, "Wait, who is this guy that's taking care of his friends in such a way that they want to carry him?" And so, yeah, just I think that that is a superpower of hers, a God-given superpower that she can cut to that and see the person kind of through everything else. And so, yeah, I'm just thankful for that, because she really got to know me and continues to get to know me and continues to see me as something more than a guy in a wheelchair. So makes me forget I'm in a wheelchair.
No, I love that story and the way, everything evolved there. And looking forward to meet Katie at the conference this year too. So that'd be
Yeah,
great.
yeah.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, this has been great sharing everything here. And then can you talk just a little bit about your daily life now? What a typical day of the week looks like for you. Of course, I realize it's dependent on if you're traveling and everything else, but
Sure.
generally, what does a day in the life look like for you?
Oh man, I don't even know right now. You asked me on the wrong day. No, I mean, really, it's kind of a get up in the morning and see what's on the agenda, and hopefully don't forget about interviews like this one. sometimes I do, but yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the nonprofit, and my sister actually works for us now. Works for We Carry Kevin. sorry. She is our director of family engagement. So every family that reaches out about a backpack, she stays in touch with. And so we like to say that she has about 900 pen pals in 39 countries around the world. And so, a lot of my work is in tandem with what she is doing. And keeping up with what we're doing online, keeping up with speaking engagements and interviews. But then also in between all of that, working on some new books, to share more of our story and more of the idea behind our story. And yeah, that's kind of my day.
That's great. And you mentioned too before we started recording an update you had with We Carry Kevin. You want to share that?
Sure. So yeah, a big thing that's going on at We Carry Kevin right now. A few months ago, I think it was actually right after Thanksgiving, on Giving Tuesday, we launched this new platform, which we call our causes page. And if you go on our website, there's a section where families who want a backpack but can't afford it, we set up a crowdfunding page for them on our website. And then they can share that page to their community online and get their community around them to donate to their backpack and sponsor their backpack, which especially if it's overseas, the shipping just gets so outrageous. A lot of families may be able to afford the backpack, but not the shipping or the taxes or anything. So yeah, we've created this platform for crowdfunding each family's backpack. And I love it because what it does is it gives that family or that individual, it gives them voice. It also gives them something kind of a softball pitch of asking for help in their community, inviting people into their need. asking sorry, asking for help to raise money for a backpack so you can go hiking is a lot more fun than asking for help to go to the bathroom. And so it's giving them that opportunity to invite people into their need and hopefully start some conversations and build more community around them. Because we also share those causes pages. And so sometimes the people who donate to those causes aren't part of their community, but then now they are tied into them. So we're giving voice and building community. And then of course, once it's fulfilled, we send them the backpack. So that also gives them opportunity to go out and have their own adventures. And then we get to share those stories as they share them with us. And those adventures could be anything from we've seen a family hike up a volcano. We've seen a family walking across a frozen lake. But then we've also seen families that use it for their farm chores in the morning and they take their child with them. Or they use it to take the bus to doctor's appointments because there aren't accessible taxis where they live. And so it just the possibilities are endless because these families are getting creative and thinking outside the box while using the backpack. So we get to share those stories and build community and it's kind of funny. I don't know when this episode will air, but all of our causes actually got fulfilled like sometime last week. So right now we don't have any up on the website right now, but probably once this episode comes out, we'll have some more because families just continue to reach out and say, "Hey, how do I get a backpack? And how do I get these friends?" And so this is how we're trying to answer those questions. So check it out. And since this is for the SMA community, if you're interested in the backpack, that may be a good way to get one, to get your own. So check it out. And if you or someone you know might be interested, then let us know.
I love it. That's great. Excuse me. And well, Kevin, I know we've had this has gone over a little bit, but that's okay. This has been great. But just in closing here, oh, I was gonna no. Just in closing here, and I know a lot of what you said kind of answers this question, but what advice do you have to others in the SMA community, especially those who may be doubting something? I talked about the relationship thing earlier, but whether it's applying to anything, whether it's an adventure they want to do or a career or relationship, anything like that. What advice do you have, particularly to that group of people?
Yeah, I think I just go back to what I grew up with, which was figure out what you want to do and figure out how to do it. And it might look differently than you expected, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. So dream big and go for it, and invite others into it. That goes beyond asking for help. It really, I choose carefully those words of invite people into your world, invite people into your need, to be part of it and care for them along the way. Let it be an experience for you and them together because you could take over the world and be hugely successful and find the key to independence and all this stuff. But if you do it by yourself, it's kind of it's lacking. There's a richness to inviting people into your dreams and your needs, and you're gonna it's gonna be really beautiful thing. So
I think that's perfect. And I love to see just in the time I've known you to see how much, you know, the organization's grown, all the things like you're experiencing and everything. So that's great. And yeah, so we'll, and I'll let you know if anyone else in public mistakes, me for you, that'd be pretty great, you know, cause we're,
or the other way around.
That would be, if you get mistaken for me, that would be just something else. But yeah, definitely let me know there. But yeah, man. Well, Kevin, thanks so much again. And for our listeners out there, you can go to Kevin's website. Is it wecarekevin.com or .org?
.org.
.org. Okay, got it. And then all his social media there is for that. We'll drop links in the description as well. But Kevin, thanks so much again for coming on today. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you. We'll see ya.
Absolutely. And for our listeners out there, you can listen to more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly in our forums and check out smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.